I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Karma is the guy on the Chiefs. Coming straight home to me is VGC, a video game podcast with me, Jordan Midler, Pete Donaldson, and Aaron Bain. This week, the PS5 could be slowing down, Helldivers 2 is heating up, and Embracer is being silly. But first, how are we doing, folks? Aaron, you're darkening our door once again.
Hey, thanks for having me over.
You're very welcome.
Well, how are you two?
Yeah, you know, very busy. Can't say why, but very busy. Pete, how are you? The car has landed. Now, people that listen to the extended Stack Universe will know that our very own Pete Donaldson has been importing a car from Japan for about 7 years, and it is now ready to rumble. How has that been going?
Yeah, it's quite difficult to import a car when you literally have no history or knowledge on how to do the process. And the people you kind of employ to help you out on stuff are imbecilic in their best. It's been going well. It's been going. It started in September. I thought, you know what? I like a project. I like something on the horizon to look forward to. I like to, you know, spend lots of hours watching YouTube videos about something I'm just not across, and I like learning stuff. But the certain changes in my life meant that I have no time for this anymore, and I would have happily seen that boat that took my car from Kanazawa to Southampton docks hit by the Houthis, to be honest. I would have happily seen that in the drink, smashed it in the Suez Canal, because as soon as it started its journey, my life got very busy and I thought, I'm not going to have time to do this, am I? So it's now moored, very much like that ship that smashed up in the Suez Canal at my father-in-law's house on his driveway, because I don't even have a driveway and I need to do things like change the oil, and so I need to put it on ramps or put it on a platform or something, none of which I can do on someone else's driveway. I'm not leaving oil all over the place. Where if you don't have access to a driveway or a garage, where do you change oil or do general kind of maintenance on your car? Do you just do it in the street? Because that seems weird.
It's been great fun listening to this undertaking, but it did always seem like the direction of travel was that this was going to end up as some kind of two piano situation. Long term fans of podcasts will remember, but the thing is, is there an enthusiast community in the UK that you can fob this off to at great expense to yourself, or is it just going to be a millstone around your neck?
Not really, because I think, it's a real albatross. And I think the people who know about the Toyota Century really know about the Toyota Century. I don't know anything about it. So I'm very much, the power dynamic of that particular sale would very much be weighted in the favour of the other people. So, but I am becoming incredibly au fait with the Amayama.com and Yoshiparts.com Japanese suspension arm purveyors. It really, I know my way around a very specific part of an extension bush on a bit of transmission, so on a bit of extension. So in summary, don't know anything about cars, know a little bit more now, but I wish I didn't.
Could you not have started with like a Fiesta or something?
Yeah, well, I've gone, I learned to drive 2 years ago, Aaron.
To drive, let's start fixing them.
Fiat 500 straight to land yacht. It's no good. So it's a nightmare. My life is hell.
I mean, I get a bit nervous when I'm buying like a Pokemon card off Japanese eBay. The fact that you've like, I just wouldn't believe that it was going to turn up, and all the pictures you got from this car, like, I know you're more au fait with Japan than the majority of the people in the UK, but still, that's a difficult one.
I think when you've got a kind of quite childish idea of the Japanese, and you think they're very trustworthy and honourable. not been my experience in the whole car importing situation, if I'm completely honest. Turns out used car dealers are very much the same a world over.
Other used car dealer countries are available. Slight programming note,
tell me who it is. I'll import a car from them.
I've got a parking ticket sitting on my desk that I'll let you deal with if you really want to sort it. Don't worry, it wasn't me. I'm not paying it. Fuck the government. point of order, it is Thursday. Today, Xbox will be publishing their suicide note, aka their business update, telling us that a few small games are coming to other platforms. We are going to do a special episode, myself and the man Chris Scullion, talking through all of the news that comes out of that. Personally, I don't expect it to be the Megaton Master Chief with a PlayStation 2 over his shoulder that people are kind of theorizing about, but it will still be newsworthy, so look for that in your pod holes tomorrow. Are we ready for story number one?
Go for it.
Is the PlayStation 5 entering the latter half of its life cycle? Sony says it expects the PlayStation 5 hardware sales to, quote, gradually decline during its next fiscal year, which runs from April 2024 to March 2025. It also confirmed that it plans to release, quote, no major existing franchise titles during this 12-month period. Now, we'll pause there. Aaron, is this the end? Is Push Square wrapping up? The PlayStation 5 is over?
I find this to be like, it's everyone's going crazy. Like, what did we expect? See, if you look at the release dates of every other PlayStation, there's about 6 to 7 years between it. We're on year four of the PS5. Is this a surprise? No, it's literally just, I don't understand. Like, everyone just saying that's it, it's so over. I think the problem with the PS5 now is that it does kind of, because of the whole COVID thing and like delays and stuff, it does kind of feel like it's still starting up because it's only just became available, you know, within the last like year. Folk are, you know, they're overdramatic about it, I think.
Folk are overdramatic, and I agree. I was on Jeff Grubb's Morning Bonanza on Giant Bomb yesterday, and I was talking about how if you look at this point in the PlayStation 4's life cycle, it was 2017. We were getting Persona 5, we were getting the first Horizon game, and not much else. Think about what came out after that on the PS4.
It was a very top-heavy schedule for the PS4.
Yes, so I think when business people, including the new Sony boss, who is a fellow slaphead like me, I appreciate him very greatly, comes out and says things like this, he's not speaking to Johnny Metal Gear that's on Twitter trying to analyze all these things. And this is often a roadblock we come up against when business people talk to consumers. They don't really get it. They continued here saying that in the company's financial results for the 3 months ending on December 31st, 2023, Sony's gaming division reported another record quarter in terms of revenue, with PS5 sales reaching 54.7 million. It lowered its lofty hardware target from 25 to 21, but this isn't the end of the world. Pete, why do people get so scared when business people report business things like this?
Because they're not used to talking to adults, I think, in many ways. And they don't understand businessmen's kind of like why they're doing stuff and why they're saying things. And they're saying things to satisfy and explain things to shareholders and people and the city. And when us gamers here, we go, I don't want to see another Spider-Man. But it is, like, I mean, this generation is quite unique in the life of a development of a game has become so unbelievably long for a AAA title. You get one a generation, maybe two if you're lucky. But I think in this case, you might be lucky to just get out of every kind of like major franchise. You'll get one game. One game per system. So it is unique because we feel like we haven't had enough titles. But the simple fact is, games just take too long to make. And the year of that kind of mid-title, the age of that mid-title is clearly starting to wane.
I agree. The kind of the glory days, not glory days, but like that golden period from 2016 to 2020, where PS4 was just firing out ridiculous exclusives all the time. And it kind of bled into the PS5, where that first year, you had your Demon Souls, your Ratchets and stuff like that. You got to your Spider-Mans. As you say, Pete, it's not physically possible to produce games of the current scale on those kind of timelines anymore. It's much more likely that you get a Naughty Dog situation where the games Naughty Dog put out on the PS4 was Uncharted 4 and The Last of Us Part 2 in terms of new games. That's two for a long-ass generation. I think you get one Naughty Dog game this generation, potentially. New Naughty Dog game. I just ripped my headphones straight out of my
so
ears.
So excited.
I was so pumped up about this proposed Naughty Dog game.
Naughty Jordan.
Naughty dog. But Aaron, do you agree? Do you think that this is a reality of the $300 million game coming home to roost? We can't make them in 3 years anymore. This isn't the PlayStation 2.
Yeah, I mean, you even saw it with the development of God of War Ragnarok. They had initially spoken about it being a trilogy, but then were like, that's going to be 10 years, you know, yep. Five for each game, so let's make it a two-parter. Like, that's is the reality of it. There's obviously the talk of like how sustainable it is. It's a difficult situation because I can't really see companies and like consumers wanting them to take a step back in a way, you know, like to make the games less sparkly and less features and smaller. You know, there's going to be a market for it, but for those big games, like people, whatever Naughty Dog brings out next, they're going to expect it to be like on par with The Last of Us Part 2 at least, or a little bit bigger. So yeah, it is a difficult situation, but it's just being realistic. Like you're saying, you're not going to get so many, you know, like someone was talking about the 360 generation, you had the full Gears trilogy. Like, that's not happening.
Look back at those games. Like, look back at the scope of those games. Look back at what they're... Though, that was back in the days where you would go to Game Center and the Paisley Center, God rest it, and you would pay £40 for, like, a 7-8 hour experience, trade it in, go.
Yeah.
That is just not the proposition these days. You get people saying that Spider-Man 2 was too short. Like, come on now! Like, what are we talking about?
I was looking at the length of Astro's Playhouse this morning. It was like one, like somebody did a speed run, or not even a speed run. They just played through it, and it was like 1 hour 45. I went, good. That's how long things should be.
What a game!
That's how long things should be. But maybe we should be in a situation where we have not intergenerational kind of redoing of older games. Just having anything that's released in the first year of the PS5 gets a redux, gets a re-release with better textures at the end, because people learn more about the system, don't they? Because you remember like when the PS3 and the cell architecture and stuff, people were learning how to do good things with it. And I watched so many sort of retro YouTube videos where somebody's gone, you will not believe the polygons that the Nintendo DS pushed in this game at the end of the DS's life cycle. So, you know, people do learn kind of shortcuts and better ways to do things. And, you know, drivers get updated and the Sony architecture software-wise get a bit better. So maybe we'll be seeing like games that got released in the first year of PS5 at the end, just before PS6 or whatever it's going to be, gets a redo with slightly more polygons or something.
The Last of Us Part 1 remastered remake, double edition, that's really what we need. And we'll go back to Sony boss Hiroki Totoki here regarding PS5 hardware, which will enter its fifth year since launch, fifth fiscal year, people relax. Partially due to entering the latter half of the console cycle, we're aiming to optimize sales with a greater emphasis on balance with profits, so expect a gradual decline in unit sales for the next fiscal year onwards. And here is the money. Regarding first-party software, we aim to continue to focus on producing high-quality productions and producing live-service games, but while major projects are currently under development, we do not plan to release any new major existing franchise titles next fiscal year, like God of War Ragnarok and Marvel Spider-Man 2. Aiden, when I heard this, I thought, well, they're making Ghost of Tsushima 2. Do they not count that, or is that a 2025 game?
I don't think you're getting that this year at this point. I'd really expected it before, but considering we've still not heard anything, they're not like doing a game of that size and doing a kind of shadow drop where it's like, it's coming out in 3 months. That's just not happening, I don't think.
That's not how Sony rolls.
But like obviously to look at that statement to say like existing franchises, we think we know that Concord's coming this year. They have said that that's 2024, and that's going to be a like a Sony thing. And that doesn't, like we're saying, that doesn't necessarily mean we're not getting new IP, does it? Like it's just the existing stuff, the big franchises that you associate with PlayStation. But I think that's still kind of exciting, because is it not about time we started to lay the foundations for the next set of like PlayStation icons? When you're on PS6, you're like, man, I can't wait for Concord 2 or whatever. I don't know.
Exactly. You know, this is the point in the generation where you launch a Horizon and then Aloy becomes a big deal for the next time around. It becomes something you merchandise. But it all depends what you take by them saying big kind of franchises. Obviously, we're not getting the new Spider-Man. We're not getting the new Wolverine. We're not getting a new Naughty Dog game or anything like that. But something on that tier below it, maybe like Sony Bend's new game, something like that. It's all couched in language that can be very easily hand waved away where they release something and shareholders go, I thought you said this. And it's like, oh no, we meant the 15 million games. We meant Spider-Man and God of War. But look at the stuff that's coming out for the rest of the year. You've got your Stellar Blade, you've got your Rise of the Ronin, you've got Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, which based on that demo, people are going absolutely crazy for. It's not like there is not stuff coming for the PS5. Pete, do you think Sony's kind of not hurt themselves, but they've set such an expectation of always having these big games. So as soon as they say, maybe we don't have one, we have a bit of a fallow year for our own first party stuff. Do you think that hurts the image, or do you think that there's just so much to play that people don't really care?
But before the first Spider-Man of the new Spider-Man games, like, would you say that this wasn't a huge franchise for Sony? And same with God of War Ragnarok. Two games ago, would you have said that they were as big as that? So yeah, I think, they're spending a lot of money, so they expect a lot of money back. So maybe they're just talking about, we're not going to be releasing massive games in the next fiscal year that cost this amount of money, rather than what they bring in. So, you know, the Ronin could bring in a ridiculous amount of money. I watched a gameplay trailer of it this morning, and I was a bit like, "That's a bit clunkers." I don't know. These feels a bit clunkers. Is it something you guys get?
I think that game will be a big hit, mainly because there is a Days Gone Event Horizon where a certain type of open world kind of 7 out of 10 game hits with people so strongly. And this game looks like a kind of Ghost of Tsushima, Assassin's Creed-y kind of amalgamation with the Koei Tecmo combat that people are really into. So I think this is a sleeper. I bet it gets like 80s reviews. I think that'll be a runner. That'll run and run.
Is it because everyone remembers, like, is it Tenchu from, like, PlayStation 2 time?
Exactly.
Like,
it's clambering on roofs. Like that. Yeah. Aiden, what do you think of PS5's kind of lineup this year from what we know? Because I don't think it's as doom and gloom as people seem to say.
No, well, when I was, I've actually been making, like, in the process of making another video of, like, the upcoming games, and I think what you're missing is, like, the Spider-Man, that is just the main thing, and everyone clutches onto that. They're like, oh, there's not like that big IP. But when you look at all of the other games coming out, there's plenty of like really exciting games. You know, look at this month alone. You've had Helldivers 2, you've had Pacific Drive comes out, you get Final Fantasy 7 Rebirth. Just last month we had Tekken 8 and Infinite Wealth. And, you know, we've already had like really good games on the PlayStation 5. Not necessarily exclusive, all of them, but no, there's still games to play. I also feel like this generation to me like stands out as a generation that's focused more on the hardware than the games themselves. Because obviously we've had the PSVR 2, say what you will about that. You've had the PS Portal, the
PSP headset. Baby, come on. Best handheld 2024.
Mate, I've got it sitting right here. I was charging because I was playing it last night.
Look, I cannot be bothered taking that 40 stone PlayStation 5 to Laura's house every other day. So I use that PS Portal and it works like a dream.
Yeah, exactly. So I do think that's kind of been the focus this generation. And like, I don't know, people complain about like, what's the point in getting a PS5 now? Because this is it. Like, I still feel like this is a pretty new feeling console, you know, in terms of, you know, when you look at the PS4, there were things about the PS4 that were already probably annoying us at this point. Like, the sound of the fans, like, it's crazy. That was really annoying. It stuttered with those kind of bigger games.
We were already looking for a Pro because it was so underpowered from launch.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Whereas the 5, to me, feels like every time I go onto it and I see the dashboard and it's all sparkly in 4K, I'm like, yeah, that's gaming right there, you know? Mm. And the whole PC debate, I hate it.
You hate the personal computer?
I hate the thing that, like, the thing I've seen a lot of now is, like, why would you even buy a PlayStation? Because this is it. It's going to be done in the next handful of years. Why would you do that when you can buy a PC? Mate, you're spending, like, the cost of a PS5 every other year anyway because, like, you're trying to upgrade your game. And just because the PS5, the PS6 comes out in 2026 or 7 doesn't mean that this is dead. You know, people still play PS4 now. And the games still come out for it. This is only really the first year to my last where we've left PS4 behind. But that's still another 3 years on top of the PlayStation 5. So I don't really get that sentiment to be honest.
Yeah. I think we still have yet to see the best things come from the PS5. I think people should stop worrying so much about what is said in these financial...
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the thing is, Sony has a fiduciary duty to say these things, but they don't actually impact Johnny Game Buyer all that much. Like,
no.
And just briefly on the PC thing, I imagine we see a lot more PC and PlayStation day and date stuff, but I think your marquee franchises, your Last of Us 3s, it's a 6-month window rather than a 2-year window, because they still want to say this thing. When the adverts come on in the Champions League, they want to say the only place you can play this is the PlayStation, and then in tiny, tiny letters they say 6 months you can play it on the PC, but right now
it's also the PlayStation. I also don't think, like, if you look at the PS4 generation, when The Last of Us Part 2 came out, I don't think anyone, when they bought a PS4 in 2013, would have thought a game like that would have been possible on the hardware. Definitely not.
The Last of Us Part 2 on PS4 looks better than some PS5 games. Like, people need to chill out. Story number two. Quote, it was a truly awful idea to spend $125 million on Immortals of Avium, a former developer has said.
Immortals of Deluxe version, isn't it?
I know. Season pass, out your ass.
Lot of figurines.
Yeah. Immortals of Avium was released on PS5, Xbox Series X, PC last August, where it received a meta score of 70. I liked it slightly more than most did, but that seems about right. However, the following month, developer Ascendant Studios laid off nearly half of its staff, with the CEO later saying it was down to poor sales during a crowded release window. If you remember, this came out near your Baldur's Gates, near your Spider-Mans. Mm-hmm. It was a disastrous place to release it. Now, in a new report on IGN, an anonymous former employee of Ascendant Studios said the game cost around $125 million in total, and that making a single-player game with that budget was asking for failure. Quote, at a high level, Immortals was massively overscoped for a studio's debut project. The development cost was around $85 million, and I think EA kicked in $40 million for marketing and distribution. Editorial note, that money was wasted because no one knew what Immortals of Avium was, no one knew it was coming out, no one knew anything. Back to the quote. Sure, there was some serious talent on a development team, but trying to make a AAA single-player shooter in today's market was a truly awful idea, especially since it was a new IP that was also trying to leverage Unreal Engine 5. What ended up launching was a bloated, repetitive campaign that was far too long. Pete, a mega-expensive single-player game with a new IP, is that dead in the water in 2024, or is this more a reflection of the game itself?
I think definitely the latter. And just magic, man.
Yeah.
Magicians are liars. Like, there's no when people are just splashing around sort of blue and red lights in the sky, I'm just like, there's something not. I enjoyed Hexen back in the day, and I enjoyed Heretic back in the day.
Hell,
they were good shooters, but there's something not very visceral about a magic trick, like some magic hitting you. I don't know what it is. They tried their best, but I played it and I was just like, I'm just bouncing off this. And I thought that the characters were in the hall relatively charmless. I just really bounced off it. It just seemed to be, you know, it was almost like asset flips from the magician page on Unreal 5. It was just like it just didn't have what it needed for me. I don't know why. I'm not a games developer, but yeah, I played that title and I really did bounce off it.
I actually can't even remember if I played that or not. I'm not. I'm like trying to get in my head whether it was.
£40 million of marketing.
Yeah. Part of that £40 million flew me to San Francisco and got me the worst food poisoning of my life. So money went well spent, if you ask me.
The brown lights in the sky.
I think Pete's right though. It just didn't. I don't think the idea of making a high budget new IP is like the thing that was wrong with it. It just didn't look that great. I think for me, like those kind of games, you need to have like the kind of interesting world for one. And it was just like magicians fighting things. Like that was all that's off in the
title,
trailers.
Man. What the fuck is an Immortal of Avium? Like, it's completely
Sandrak.
Yeah.
Well, one of the baddies was called Sandrak.
Yeah.
And it had 2Ks in it. And just we don't need it. We've moved on. We've moved on past characters with double letters that don't need to be there.
It was Brett Robbins from Ascendant went on Patrick Klepek's podcast to talk about this, and it's a really great conversation because it's honesty that you don't get from people in his position just being like, from the start, we started calling it like Magic Call of Duty. That was a mistake because it didn't really impart what we were trying to go for the game. Like, it's a it's a really great postmortem. I would recommend people check that out. There's a quote from another Ascendant developer here saying, quote, "It's not a sequel or a remake. It doesn't take 400 hours to beat. It has zero microtransactions, no pointless open world grinding. Although not everyone loved it, it reviewed pretty well. Currently sitting on a 74 on OpenCritic and mostly positive on Steam. No one bought it." I think this is a weird situation because, as people pointed out in response to this story, single player games were banging last year. Like, plenty of them did really well. Like, you got your success stories like Baldur's Gate 3, the new Jedi game did brilliantly, and yes, those are like associated with IP, although I would argue that Baldur's Gate 3, man on the street has no idea what a Baldur's Gate is or anything like that, so that doesn't actually get the rub from an IP that
even Alan Wake 2
Alan Wake 2 perhaps didn't sell brilliantly, but it was the game of the year.
I do think that, like, with these, there is an element of like how busy it was and how many good games were coming out, because, like, you know, I have a lot of friends that would be looking to buy games and I go, like, that's the one I'm going to buy the now. I'm not, whereas, like, I've always, before I even got into this, was kind of like, I kind of wanted to scoop up everything, but most people probably would go, no, I'll miss that because this is coming out 2 weeks later. And I think when you have games like Baldur's Gate 3, that was the case. And I actually don't like that comment, though, just to be like, oh, it's not a sequel, it's not a remake, blah, blah, blah. It's kind of like shoving the blame to other aspects of why it didn't sell, rather than just maybe looking at the game itself. Like, I know this is kind of what you were just saying with the whole magic thing, but, like, I see that, you know, bang, 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 like, coming out of the finger. Mate, I just want a big gun when I'm playing first-person shooters. I know that maybe that makes me seem like a simple guy, but, you know, there's nothing quite as satisfying.
We're such bros, aren't we? We're such militaristic bros on the camera. Love it.
Yeah, it doesn't have the same appeal. It was actually the exact reason why I just never bothered with, what was the other one? Ghostwire Tokyo.
Tokyo was like Doctor Strange.
Yeah, I just saw that and I was like, mate, give him a gun. Maybe then I'll play it.
But at least Ghostwire Tokyo, and, you know, I have a distinct love for that part of, like, Shibuya that the start was based in. I just wanted to wander around that, really. But it just kept on pulling me into cutscenes. I didn't know. I want to go down there. I want to go and see if Tokyo Hands is there. I don't know. You know, I want you to just give me a walking simulator around Shibuya. But yeah, you're right. There's just something missing. And I think in the age of quite greasy looking AI art that everyone seems to be bloody making, it felt like greasy AI art. It just seemed like an amalgamation of everything, but nothing really sort of standing out.
Yeah, you looked like you would look at a character and it would have seven fingers. But yes, Immortals of Avium, we hardly knew ye. Story number three before the break. Silent Hill 2's latest trailer, quote, "does not reflect the spirit of the game," Bloober Team president says. The president of Bloober Team has said Konami's latest trailer for Silent Hill 2 is not an accurate representation of the game his studio is working on. During the State of Play, a combat trailer was revealed, and the reception was, "this story says mixed, I think that's charitable." At the time of writing, the PlayStation's YouTube channel version, which has around a million views, has 54% likes, with around 29,500 of the 46,000 users deciding to leave feedback, opting to give it a thumbs down. In an interview with Polish investor news channel in Westories.tv, I think that's Polish for investor, to quote Jeff Grubb. The video, for which has been taken offline but was spotted and transcribed by Eurogamer Poland, Bloober Team president Pietro Babino was asked about the reaction to the trailer. He said, "I wrote those negative comments myself." Saying, "in all seriousness, we are not responsible for the marketing side. That is entirely the responsibility of our partner, which is Konami. Certainly, the trailer does not reflect the spirit of the game. It's not the spirit of either what it used to be or what we are creating now. We are trying to fully recreate this romantic version about the game, which debuted 22 years ago. We think that when players see the real gameplay, the real game, they will judge it in a completely different way." Pete, how frustrating must it be for Bloober Team to watch their marketing partner and Konami shit all over this game that they're working so hard on?
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, you've got to wake up in the morning, wash your face, look into a mirror and say, "I am the president of the Bloober Team." Now, I know they're an established horror developer, but there's nothing funnier than it sounds like an aggressive rapper talking about how sexually confident he is. "I'm the CEO of Bloober Team." What? It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, you gave them the gameplay, presumably. Somebody FTP'd them an MP4 file and they've put it out. So, yeah. I mean, at some point in development, that is what we were looking at. And, I mean, it does look a little bit like, does look a bit iPhone gamey, doesn't it? Maybe that's kind of the direction they're kind of moving.
Yeah, it's like Silent Hill was never like this Resident Evil 2 style combat game. Mm. Like, it was such a weird way to present that. Aiden, this is the second time Bloober Team have said Konami is like messing up when it comes to the marketing side. What do you think the relationship is like there? And do you, like me, believe that this will be the last time they work together?
Yeah, I've not played the original Silent Hill 2. So this is
you were
one
probably
of those,
about two when it came out.
So this is one of those ones where like I heard about it. You know, obviously we've had the Resident Evil remakes, and that's been ones that I hadn't played, and I've really enjoyed now having the new version of that to try out. And when I heard that Silent Hill 2 was getting somewhat similar treatment, I was like, yeah, this is going to be good. Everything I've seen so far has made me want to completely skip this game. I don't think anything about it looks any good, to be honest. And that last trailer in particular, they're like, oh, the focus was the combat. But the combat also just looked kind of rubbish, in my opinion. Yeah, I don't know. Like, when I think of survival horrors, I don't. This is kind of what they're saying. Like, that's not the focus. But, like, that's not what I like about those games. I don't want to shoot something in the head 20 times, you know, where I barely get any bullets. I want to be, like, you know, sneaking around these atmospheric hallways and, you know, all that kind of stuff. That's what I like about those games. So yeah, there has been a clear like misjudgment when it comes to the marketing with this, and I'm just not entirely confident that this is going to be. I think so many people are just thinking the original was a classic, this is a remake, it's also going to be, you know, very good. But I'm not really getting the vibe from that so far, and maybe that's just the marketing, but who knows? I don't know.
What is the worst experience you've had with an advertorial partner, Pete, that you can talk about?
Oh. There's a couple of quite tense Google Stadia moments back in the day. I'm really honest. I mean, most kind of like advertorial kind of relationships I've ever jobs I've worked on have mainly involved influencers, TikTok stars. They turn up, they don't really know what they're selling, they can't do anything to camera properly unless they're in the bedroom and you know they're freestyling. They can't deliver a message, and I've got to basically do all the heavy lifting, and I can't do that anywhere. But I'm not paid the big bucks. Unbelievable. But yeah, anything like that really.
I don't know. I think your advertiser voice is very good. The amount of podcasts I listen to that you're advertising stuff, and it takes me a few seconds to remember that it's you saying this stuff. It's like a brand is going to put their message in the voice of this man. Come on now.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, and Athletic Greens, anything podcasty, anything mattressy, anything food, like food boxes, snack boxes, things like that. Yeah. I'm your man.
my favorite. My favorite genre of podcast ad is the ones that run too early. So just before Christmas, I was getting served a lot of podcast ads being like, it's January now. We've all had such a big Christmas. Wasn't it great? It's like, mate, it's like the 15th of December. There could be a nuclear attack. Or like when I messaged you and said that I was getting ads in like Swedish on one of our podcasts. Oh, wow, great.
At that point, honestly, like if we're not advertised, because you opt into stuff and you opt out of stuff when you run a podcast company. You say, well, we probably won't be advertising Raytheon and, you know, literal tools of war. Betting partners we have partnerships with and a few other things. So it's actually quite difficult to sort of say, right, we'll do this and do that. But sometimes you will get adverts from petrol companies who are, they're not selling themselves as petrol companies. They are selling themselves as sort of green initiative thought leaders, so to speak. So the adverts are all about how to save the planet rather than just want to get a bit of petrol. So it's kind of like we opt in and opt out of stuff, but like sometimes they can be quite cute about their classification. So occasionally, we'll on the Football Ramble, there'll be an advert that runs that's literally for like the Saudi piff posse. And you're like, well, we clearly don't want to be advertising that because we've complained about them so many times. So but then you've got to also balance out what you're willing to do and what you're not willing to do, bearing in mind that, you know, we employ above a media job rate, quite a lot of people in our office now. So there is a certain amount of, you know, I have my own political feelings. My business partners have their own political feelings, and we want to do the best for what's the business. But at the end of the day, we do have to keep the lights on. We do have to keep people employed, and we do pay decent wages. So Yeah,
there were no cans of Monster in the fridge when I was at Stack last week. That's my only note.
No, we've got that weird kind of water. There was somebody sent us a big crate of Prime. just because I said I wanted to make it uncool because I'm 42 and I want to drink Prime publicly and so that no teenager in my vicinity will ever flirt with it again. I mean, I will say, Jordan, for the record, you are drinking a big bottle of orange drink, but because of the slightly poor internet I've got, it just looks like you're drinking piss you found in the street. It does look like a trucker's thrown that out of a window.
Look, this was a situation where I first tasted this in an airport. Piss, that is. No, this Rubicon, and it was like the most refreshing thing I'd ever have in my life. And yesterday, yeah, I was quite unwell, so I was like, you know what, I'm just going to get a big 2 liter of it. But yes, when I was in Stack, and I was presented by a producer with a white can that was Monster shaped, my eyes lit up, and then when I saw it was water, I was heartbroken.
did you try and pour some on your tongue and it just evaporated before it reached there? Yeah, because
your tongue was
like holy water.
Used to it.
I know.
Yes.
Absolutely repulsive. Speaking of our advertising partners, we will be back in a minute after this message from the Conservative Party. See you in a minute.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
And we are back. Lots of good feedback to last week's episode with Ben. A lot of people saying he's a very famous voice actor and a very busy man. Why did he waste his time sitting with you losers? But
so rude.
Ben Starr would do anything for me. I say the word.
He's unbelievably handsome, and he speaks handsomely as well.
The voice is a joke, man. Listening to the three of us, like Andy with his Cockney accent, Chris like whispering into the mic, and me talking Scottish, and he comes out here and he's like, "I'm Ben Starr," and it's like, "Oh, come on, man!
Just give us one day in your shoes, Ben. Just give us one day.
How do you think I'm feeling?
I just want to live my life."
Yeah. He's a good boy. God bless Ben. He will return. Ben Starr will return, as the big advertiser board at the end of the podcast said. Let's get into the next story. Arrowhead is staffing up after Helldivers 2 success to, quote, beef up its content plans. Studio CEO and game director Johan Pelested? I cannot pronounce your second name.
Pelested.
You show me a footballer's name, I seemingly have no problem working that out, but on the fly here, I don't want to. We
sometimes have to write the certainly like the Eastern European names for Marcus from the Football Ramble, but it just confuses him more. It just makes it worse.
There was the wonderful moment on commentary, I can't remember who it was, a few years back, where a commentator was like, "I can't say the left back's name, so I'm just going to call him left back." That's the level of discussion we get into here. He has said that the company wants to recruit more developers to, quote, beef up its content plans for the Sony published shooter, which is now available on PS5 and PC. The game has attracted over 200,000 concurrent players on Steam alone, making it Sony's biggest PC launch to date. Aiden, you've been playing that Helldivers 2. What a game. What a game.
Yeah, I reviewed it. I love this game. Like, properly, it's probably the most fun I've had with friends in like a co-op shooter for years, like genuinely.
Since we played that dumb VR game.
What one was that?
The one where you had guns and you were like throwing them to each other and stuff like that.
Oh, the zombie. Yeah. Was that Pavlov?
Yeah.
That was funny because you were just like chipping all the zombies around you.
I can reload. It wasn't working. I was just punching them. I'm like, I can't reload my gun. It's not working.
Yeah, no, this is a lot of fun. I mean, the thing that I find really entertaining about this game is how it seems to kind of find that balance between making you feel like the coolest guy ever, you know, like the atmosphere, on especially the thing that people are calling Robot Vietnam, the whole like automaton fights, those are crazy, and it just looks so cool and it's so cinematic and the score is incredible, but it's also how stupid it makes you feel, which is like really funny, like getting killed by your own sentry guns or accidentally throwing things down and blowing yourself up, all of that, and it does both of those things really, really well, which just make for like such a fun time. And I feel like a lot of co-op shooters opt for one or the other, you know, like Destiny is a fun, like a cool game to play, and then you get things like Overcooked, which are like, the whole point is to fall out with your mates, and this brings both of those together in a really, really cool way. I have been loving this game.
It's basically Starship Troopers, isn't it, John?
Yeah.
I've not played it yet, but it seems to be very much up that kind of strata.
That is the vibe. Like you're playing on Super Earth. The entire opening video package is so funny. It's like this idyllic kind of futuristic. It's like 50s Americana, but in the future. And this guy's coming home to his wife, and this was the trailer actually. And then this his wife and his kid come out to wave hello, and then this massive bug just kills both of them. And it's like, you should enlist because this will happen to your children. And the way the mission structure is set up, you're like doing these missions on individual planets. And it gives you a percentage of how liberated the planet has been, and that's collated from like all the players. But if you go over to Earth, it's like 100,000% liberated. It's like, it's just such a funny game. Like I'm really enjoying it. I've not had as much time to play it as I want because there's other stuff going on, but it seems great.
The whole like liberation system is such a cool feature because it does make it feel like more of a community effort. You know, I've been seeing a lot of things. It's coming up on TikTok all the time and Twitter and stuff, and it's like the Helldivers community just liberated Heath, which was like 2 days after it happened, which unlocks new planets for them to play as well. But then something I didn't realize is it can actually push you back as well. So you might be at 60%, but then the Terminids are back down. You're back down to 20% or whatever. So it's such a cool. It's like a really. It's, you know how you get like Saturday morning cartoons. It's kind of like that for games for me, where it's just like you can play this for 40 minutes and it's so fun, but you can play it for 6 hours and it's also so fun. But it just like it's such a fun time, and it doesn't like it does require you to think, but it doesn't. I don't know if any of that's really making sense, but like it does all of those things so well, and it's just I just have such a laugh with it.
I'm scared that because all of these players are kind of working towards a common sort of good and the liberation, I'm scared that Peter Molyneux will be involved at the end of it, and he's going to put you in his game, except you won't.
He's at the head of the Terminants. He's the mother brain. It's a great game. I can just imagine Pete playing this and like dropping his like Helldiver pod on everyone in his team, like just trying to help, but it's like, oh god, we've killed them all.
Oopsie.
And Pete secedes to the alien front.
That'll be the DLC.
It's a good ass game. Go and play it. It's like 35 quid or 30 quid or something like that. And I know people were, you could get it on PC for like 25 or something at certain websites. But yes, it's a cool game. Hopefully more chat about that next week. And some other things next week too. No prizes for guessing what that might be. Let's do this very quickly because it's so, so stupid. Deus Ex owners to Adam Jensen actor. Stop talking about the character. Actor Elias Koufexis, who has been in a lot of stuff. He has been in Starfield as Sam Cole. He was in Star Trek Discovery. But in an interview with PC Games N, comments seem to indicate that his relationship with Eidos Montreal isn't as great as fans might assume. Quote, even when Eidos Montreal went off and did Guardians of the Galaxy and shelved the Deus Ex sequel, I had to hear about it secondhand. They didn't even throw an audition my way. They didn't tell me shit. Everything I've heard from friends is off the record, and that ain't much. I remember I heard from Eidos in 2020 when they called me to ask me to stop talking about Adam Jensen in interviews and podcasts because they wanted people to focus on other things from the studio, which really shows how popular Jensen is or was anyway. Pete, two questions. First of all, is Eidos being silly? Second of all, do they have a point in the sense that I don't want to sound uncharitable.
You're not the character, you're the VO.
Yes, exactly.
You're not the character, you're the actor playing the VO. Yeah, yeah. Yes, to an extent, but if you're unwilling to make Deus Ex games, then you know you can't legislate for. I mean, it's effectively sort of like Nintendo getting upset with like fan games, isn't it? Really, like
yeah.
It's basically making his own law in law in which Adam Jensen is upset with a games company for not releasing.
That's a great premise for the next Deus Ex game. If the actor who played Adam Jensen goes and infiltrates Square Enix or Eidos Montreal, who has it now?
Yeah,
I think.
Well, I mean, it's kind of like it. I mean, I love Adam Jensen. I love Deus Ex, and I even like just the theme tune from the first game. Just really, I think it's an A minor and E minor. And that's all it's got really, yeah. And it absolutely bangs. I love it, and I've always loved those titles, and they mean a heck of a lot to me. And I was a bit gutted that it sounds like the last kind of attempt at making one will fall very short of actually getting released. So it's sad, but I understand why a video game company would sort of go, because even like Charles Martin here, you would occasionally go, I would occasionally think he's just going off on, he shouldn't be doing so many appearances, just doing the voice.
Don't let him answer
questions.
That's
not part of his contract. No, exactly. Yeah. Weighing in on conflicts around the world. Oh God.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's kind of, it's an interesting job because they love people like even Star, like, you know, people who love the games, inhabit a role and are willing to sort of guest on every 2-bit podcast after to talk about it. You know, they love it when it serves them, but when they've got nothing to talk about in that universe, it makes their job a little bit harder and people get a bit upset. So yeah, I can understand why they're doing it, but you know, just don't give them, put it in the bloody contract, put it in the contract, or don't do it at all.
Yeah, I tend to agree. Okay, we asked the VGC Nation, what PlayStation franchise that hasn't had any games in a decade deserves to come back? I posited the MotorStorm franchise. You two might not remember that for the MotorStorm sequel, they were getting ready to release it, and there was either a natural disaster, and this second game was all about how natural disasters changed the environment that you're racing in. And then I believe the second time that it got released was when the PlayStation Network was down for about 5 months, so no one could play it online. So
I mean, they could have predicted the first one, but probably not the second one.
Yes. It was a bit of a weird one. We got we got Arctic Edge. The second one was Pacific Rift. That was the one that had the trouble with the release, but the third one, Arctic Edge, no one remembers. Then we got a PlayStation Vita one, MotorStorm RC. It was sad stuff. The VGC Maniacs gave us some real answers here. We got from the Discord, which you can come and check out, always good time in the Discord. Andrew Marmo says Resogun, Housemarque's kind of seminal PS4 game. Aaron, you're a Resogun man.
I have over 100 hours in that game.
Hell yeah. Finally, a respect for you, Jesus.
My first ever platinum, actually, was that game.
Nice.
I love Resogun. I would want them to just make don't change it. Don't, like, just add some new maps or whatever, some new ships, but keep it the same, keep it simple. Yeah. That's what made that game so good. Make it super sparkly in 4K.
When the PlayStation 4 was released and Resogun was one of the first games to use the mic and the controller, so when you picked people up, the game would talk to you through the controller. Pete, can you give us the voice of a little green man being rescued by a ship from a big apocalyptic space battle?
Oh, I'm so thankful for you picking me up. I was in the middle of a terrible battle, and thank you very much. Which seat do I sit in? It's on the floor. Okay.
There you go.
That was the
BAFTA for Little Green Man, Peter Donaldson. Thank you.
We had Ben Starr last week. We've got Pete this week. Yeah. Just wait till you see who we've got next week.
I'm the voice of Zach McCracken's assistant in Zach McCracken Beyond Space and Time German fan game. I'll have you know. I will not be silenced by Zach McCracken, the alien mind benders, Beyond Space and Time 2. German
there's so many things
game.
I've never heard of before. Just like there's so much information being thrown at me right now.
Zach McCracken was a very unlovable LucasArts game in between Maniac Mansion and Monkey Island, I believe, and no one liked it. It was a bit mad, but I did, and so do most of Germany.
Oh yeah, you know, as I'm seeing it.
Yeah.
the world at large has been trying to silence Pete Donaldson for some time, and we have not been able to do it. So I think we should just give up on this endeavor. also on the Discord, Shodan says, Bioshock. There is a new Bioshock coming. That Bioshock has been in development at 2K for 1,000,000 years. Like, I asked someone at 2K about it in 2021, and they're like, yeah, I assume we're going to see something of it soon. So yeah, I think a new Bioshock is slightly soon. A curious answer for the question, Mario Kart? not a PlayStation franchise, and also there was a new one like 2 years ago. Okay, Mario Kart, and Jamie H 1224 says a new Gravity Rush. They're making that film, Aaron. Do we bring back Gravity Rush even though there's no Japanese studios left at Sony?
Gonna surprise you here, or maybe not at all. I've not played that.
You've not played no games. How did you get that job on Push Square? You're actually stealing a wage.
We were having this discussion the other day when I revealed that I, like, up until Final Fantasy 16, I had not touched a Final Fantasy game. I was like, I'm like, you know, talk about your PS4 generation stuff, your Last of Us or whatever. Oh, mate, I'm your guy. But then you go a little further back and I'm just like, those are the classics, man. I've heard of them. But I'm trying to educate myself in some of the old ones. Slowly and surely, making sure that I'm qualified for the job that I'm in. You know, we'll get there one day. But the game, it's not like a PlayStation exclusive franchise, but the series that always comes to my head, I would just love to see so much, especially like new gen, would be Split Second. That racing game was so good. Like, that was like a classic. Me and my brother used to play it all the time, and it was so just stupid and cinematic. And I always remember playing that one over and over again with the plane. And it used to just fly over you, and the vibrations of the screen and stuff were so good, and you could explode petrol stations and everything. I want a big stupid arcade racer like that. You know, I don't want to be tuning up my car with like tiny little bits. No.
Well, just let your me hit friends and
mine. I get enough of that in the real life, to be honest. Aaron.
Oh yeah, you will.
But you got to import all your suspension arms from Japan. Oh, God.
Your friends and mine at the Walt Disney Company own Split Second. So Bob Iger's comments last week being like, these video games, the kids are into it. We might end up seeing a return. You can, thankfully, it's one of the few games in that Disney amalgam that you can still buy. You can get it on Steam now for like 16 quid. It's not supported by the Steam Deck, so it should go in rotten hell. Let's fire through some answers here. Lewis from ICO Partners says Twisted Metal. You'll get a new Twisted Metal. It might even be this year. Jess Thomas says Lair. Lair was a game where you controlled a dragon using the PS3's six-axis motion control. It was
not getting another one of those. Not getting
a horrid experience. Greg Miller, friend of the show, gave it a 4.9 on IGN. The studio that developed it was called Factor 5, so that immediately rechristened them Factor 4.9. They shuttered quite soon after that. Let's see who else. Eric Switzer from The Gamer says, it's been 10 years on the dot since Infamous Second Son. I am shocked we've not seen new Infamous game since then. That is, I know.
Was that a seller? Was that a system seller? Was that a big game?
It was popular. Like, it was, Infamous was one of your, like, PlayStation.
The launch PS4, like, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was like one of your PlayStation kind of stalwarts alongside like Joel and Ellie and Aloy and stuff like that. Like, that seemed like it was going to go forward, but I think because Ghost of Tsushima was such a big hit, it kind of pushed back the Infamous possibilities, sadly. Noble says Tokyo Jungle. You played Tokyo Jungle, Pete? That seems right up your
No, I mean, it sounds like something, two things I absolutely adore.
You play as animals running around a post-apocalyptic Tokyo. Nice. It's all grass and shit.
Okie dokie, yeah, I like that.
Yeah, he like says Dark Cloud, Legend of Dragoon, and finally Tokyo Jungle, but this time I ask Sony with a gun in my hand, which, convincing. This was the best suggestion, in my opinion. Rich8606 says Arrowhead, who make Helldivers, need to take charge of the Killzone franchise and make a new game set in Killzone with the kind of Helldiver stuff. Honestly, I could see them putting like Hellghast stuff in Helldivers with no problem. Like, the costumes kind of look like that already.
They said they were going to add like new enemy types and stuff as well, did they not?
Yeah.
I mean, like, that would be such a cool expansion for the game.
Yeah, Let them do it. No one's doing Killzone, man. Yeah, no one's fucking touching it. It's just sitting on a shelf somewhere.
Yeah, talk about a $125 million FPS IP. You know, go for that one. Yeah. That's big guns. There's no magic pew pew.
Yeah. Speaking of guns, a lot of calls, including Lexi and Backlog Gamer, for MAG to return. MAG was the massive action game. It was a 256 player multiplayer game on the PlayStation 3. And brother, did it run poorly. Oh, was it ahead of its time? Oh, did it not work?
Took a few less. Stick a few lessons
It was 256 players, but they were all broken up into squads. So I theorized that you were never actually anywhere near the full amount of players at any one time. Yeah. But
Do you remember that game? This is probably about 10 years ago. There was a game that was like a tie-in to a show, and it was like an online shooter, third person, I'm sure. And it was supposed to be that the world in the game would like evolve as like events in the show were happening. Yeah. What was that again?
What was that called? Oh my god, it was like Insurgent or something.
It didn't last.
This is how I'm going to PS3 shooter that reflected on TV show.
This is the sort of sense you put in a ChatGPT rather than Google. it's way too
Defiance. Defiance, it was called.
What was the TV show called? Was that called Defiance as well?
Yeah,
I think so. I'm now on the PlayStation blog from about a million years ago. MMO shooter Defiance coming to PlayStation 3. The wars on the game would be reflected on the TV show on the Sci-Fi Channel. That was a halcyon moment when people were just like, we'll make it a game and we'll make it an app and it'll be a TV show and it'll tie into your Twitter like
magazine.
Yeah. I don't even think I played the game. I remember just hearing about it and being like, that's kind of cool, but the show looked like, you know, you're kind of typical very cheap generic sci-fi rubbish. But
it looks absolute mince. We should all get into it. Is it still kicking up? I bet
it's got Bear McCready on the score. Yeah. There you go. Guaranteed bangers.
A few more of these, because people really want PlayStation to get the finger out and bring back old IP.
Nobody absolutely jonesing for a bit of Lemmings action.
No one's saying Lemmings.
Very much my generation. Hello, Zach McCracken and Lemmings, but Lemmings was... It was about as big as it was possible to be, really, and they've not released a game in ages.
Pete, what's the budget looking like for you to drive up here and we go to Dundee, to the home of DMA Designs, and just start canvassing for a new Lemmings game?
I mean, you've got to think that in most cavity, you know, people would in the Victorian era, they would put like razors in their walls.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? They'd stop raising, and it's always on Reddit. It's going, I found a little razor in the fucking walls. I go, yeah. Well, that's what they used to do. They used to post razors through the wall that would hide in the cavity wall it was just an easy way to dispose of razors. There's got to be like old floppy disks of like cancelled games at DMA have been like posted through the walls. That's what I imagine a video game company is like, because most of them are quite badly run. People just got to be squirreling stuff away, surely.
I think we could get 25 million from Netflix to do this.
A documentary or just to lobby a company to make
produce no content, just go and search people's houses in Dundee.
let's just start a room clearance company in Dundee.
With the agreement that when it all goes wrong and we end up in jail, then Netflix get people to actually make the documentary about these two ruffians
Of all of the children we killed with asbestos, exactly, that we find
with asbestos and floppy disks and razors brothers in the walls.
We're sharp, we're cancerous. We're the Jordan Midler, Pete Donaldson, house clearance company.
You can leave similarly glowing reviews for VGC, the video game podcast, on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Please do that. Thank you to all who wrote in for the Ben Star competition last week. I have 5 left. I will be responding to the people that I still have to respond to later today. The speed with which people answered that question... I didn't know the podcast was out and people were already emailing me the answer to that. So you people are freaks. God love you. next week, very happy to announce, we will have another in-person podcast. I'm going down that London. Ooh. I'm going down that bloody London, going down to Stack. Hopefully there will be a can of Monster there for me, but we shall see. so we will get another special guest. It's not going to be Ben Starr. He's far too busy for us, but it will be Phil Spencer. because he's big in the podcast game this week, so we thought we'd get him on a legitimate show. We will be back tomorrow, if you're listening to this on Thursday, with all the reaction to the Xbox nonsense. Until then, you can send us questions, comments, and concerns to podcast@videogameschronicle.com. You can follow us on Twitter @JordanMidler, @PeteDonaldson, @AaronBain. I didn't actually check if that's your @Aaron, is it? Is it Aaron?
It's @AaronBain _, I think, actually, because somebody out there just had to take the basic one.
Well, don't follow that, Aaron. Like follow whoever took it. Follow the guy, the original Aaron.
I follow the guy that was smart enough to get there first, you know?
My my MySpace page is myspace.com/Pete. Six Pete's.
Nice.
Six Pete's. Number five. Didn't even use it. I could have had number five.
Oh, the Six Pete's, the worst Doctor Who special in living memory. We'd like to thank the great Grant Kirkhope for the VGC podcast theme song. What else is going on this week in the world of Stack, Pete?
We're on a break with Ghost of the Machine. That's not stuff that's happening. We've got a Peter Bogdanovich retrospective kind of like tapes from his relationships with several Hollywood actors. So that's well worth a listen. That's either out now or it's coming out soon. What else? We've got Ramble Tomorrow. We've got Sports Horn. That's very good. I've listened to that. Ian Five Ankles has taken sole ownership of the show because Anthony Richardson has been thrown out of the radio show because he defecated on a car.
Well, who amongst us hasn't defecated on a car? Aaron, what's coming up on Push Square this week?
This week you have proper thrown me in there. I was just listening to Pete like, oh, that's sending in.
Do people not know what they're doing on a weekly schedule?
I could get my schedule up if you want, you know. Just check out the YouTube channel, hit the notification thing, subscribe to it, you'll see me turn up. And people complaining about my accent, probably, but, you know, it's all there.
Lovely stuff. Okay, we'll see you tomorrow, folks, for that special Xbox episode. Until then, say goodbye, Pete.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Aaron.
Goodbye.
And we'll see you tomorrow. Yo.
Lovely stuff.
VGC, a video games podcast, is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.